Shall we just attend to why we're all here?
Yes, please. Play the jingle, Ben.
Oh, yeah. Come on, mate. Yes. Ah, I'm in agony and I absolutely love this. Ah, more pain.
Crunch it. Push it. Flex it.
More pain.
Smash it. Sprain it.
Way.
The path to beauty is prolapsed hemorrhoids.
Ah.
Henry's Beefcake Journey.
So what's the latest, Henry?
Okay, so hang on. I'm just going through the emails.
Because, you know, when you want a personal training journey, that's the main thing, isn't it?
It's all about the correspondence.
The world's first correspondence fitness course.
Okay, guys, yeah, have a laugh. You guys try and organise a personal training regime or any sort of beef empire without admin. Good luck. Good luck to you.
Well, how did the Spartans do it, Henry? Eh?
Yeah,
they didn't have email, and they were hench.
Yeah, but they were a small band of men. There was only, 200 of them, wasn't there? Whatever. It was a small band of people. If you want to expand that beyond...
There's only two of you. There's you and your personal trainer.
Now. So. Beefcake Journey. Email from the Beefmaster. Hi, Henry. I saw you booked your first session. Just play the jingle again, I think, for that. Just play it again, honestly. So, obviously, doing it, guys.
Yep.
Booked.
I'm proud of you.
Woo! Yeah! Coming through, baby. Who is that guy? Yeah. He's booked.
That guy's so booked.
I'm assuming we're still in the booked, but not
that
yet completed
is so
zone. Is that correct? Is that correct, Henry?
How do you get your buddy so booked looking? Anyway. Hi, Henry. I saw you booked your first session. I'm excited to get started. Yes. I've been given an appointment to see the consultant on Thursday afternoon, however.
Oh.
So he wasn't able to make that first. The first thing we couldn't do.
Okay.
Couldn't do because I've been given an appointment to see the consultant.
The trainer's trainer, perhaps.
Presumably.
The Wellington himself.
Yeah. Because presumably there's some sort of personal trainer, sort of bishopric.
Yeah.
That he has to report to, the beef bishop.
Yeah. And at the very peak, there's some sort of queen beef.
Queen Labifa.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But anyway, long story short is so he can't do it tomorrow. I can't do it then either. There's a possibility I could do it on Friday, but I've also got the option of seeing Oppenheimer with my dad.
Okay.
And that's what it's come down to now. Whether and then next week I'm away, which means it'll be another 2 weeks. If I don't do it, if I don't do it tomorrow, I'm away the next week, so it's going to be another 2 weeks. So basically, it's now come down to, and I'm now utterly in the teeth of a sort of dilemma about, it's so hard when you have to start fitting something into your life like this. Honestly, I don't know how these Schwarzeneggers and so on do it. I honestly don't.
I think Mark Wahlberg gets up at 2 o'clock in the morning, doesn't he? I remember reading somewhere.
Oh, God.
And has a quick round of golf, doesn't he? And then before or after his workout.
Five hour sesh.
Yeah.
Then straight to the shoot. But I have to assume that means he also goes to bed at 5 p.m. But I don't know.
Well, I think he screams himself to sleep.
Okay. That burns a few last calories.
On a rowing machine.
Yeah. And his legs are so beefy now that they just exercise all night, but his upper body can go into a rest state. So his head, his neck will be asleep.
Mm-hmm.
His spine will be asleep, but his sort of pelvis and all the muscles below the pelvis will still be just crunching or doing the rowing machine or whatever, and he'll just
be locked. Himself a kind of a reverse epidural, doesn't he? So
that's right, yeah.
It's called an epidural, so everything above...
Epidural, yeah, that's right.
Everything above the lumbar region just goes...
Yeah.
Just gets turned off, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the legs are still going.
Yeah. And it's an incredible injection. It's literally the size of... the exact same size as Bob Hoskins, isn't it?
That's right. And it contains a mixture of sedatives and the lines for tomorrow as well.
That's right, they're in there.
Otherwise, how has he got time to learn them?
And so on an emotional level, because it was quite confusing to what it means is he's constantly awoken his lower spine, the depths of the jungle, sort of fear. Essentially, he wakes up, emotion, his body thinks he's being attacked by two separate clans of baboons.
Yeah.
So it's a sort of territorial panic. He wakes up, and then just straight out the door, straight onto the golf course. Which is obviously one of the only ways of calming down in that situation. But he's jacked into his lower spine adrenal panic.
Yeah, he's in permanent fight or flight, basically.
Permanent fight or flight.
And that's what you need to do, Henry, to fit this into your lifestyle. Or just don't see Oppenheimer.
Or don't see Oppenheimer. On the one hand, for Mark Wahlberg, he's very successful. His body is great. Mm-hmm. But something, for example, like trying to enjoy, for example, a candlelit dinner, and it's like in a nice French restaurant with him, for example. Because he will literally pound. He'll punch everything. He'll punch the food. He just smashes everything. He's panic. And he sort of, doesn't he? And he'll just sort of...
And he always insists the floor of the restaurant is converted into a treadmill before he arrives. So it's quite expensive. Yeah. If he's going to split the bill, you're in trouble.
Because with your dilemma, Henry,
yeah,
you could try and fit it in tomorrow. Maybe don't go into your primer. Maybe do the session. Yeah. But then you're going to France for a week. So you're going to be deep in the kind of sausage world.
Yeah.
You might basically squander all of the gains you made, right?
That's good. But that's already the kind of bargaining I'm doing in my head, Ben.
Exactly.
That's the kind of bargaining which has seen me almost, you know, which is going to see me almost a month into my beefcake journey without having seen my personal trainer. That's where this is heading.
Of course, there's father-son time. I mean,
father-son time.
I mean, I remember the first time I went to see Oppenheimer with my father, you know.
Yeah. It's one of the great moments that a man can share with his father, isn't it?
And he's going to teach you to shave there, isn't he, during the during the film?
He's going to teach you to shave while riding a bike. And also, that's emotional beef, isn't it? I'm beefing up emotionally then. Because, you know, you've got people walking around with a great six-pack, but how's their emotional six-pack? Can they shave while riding a bike? But basically, I think I'm going to have to send an email today saying... Well, I've either got to send an email to my dad saying I can't see Oppenheimer with you.
No, that makes me sad, that idea.
Or I've got to send an email to my personal trainer saying I can't...
Today is Breaking Bad News Day either way, is it?
What do you think... Ben, are you thinking I should go for Oppenheimer?
Of course.
With my personal trainer as well. And he can finally meet my dad. And the three of us can become the family that I always wanted.
Sorry, Mum, you're out.
And we can...
There's a new mother in town, and it's the Beefmaster.
And we can beef up, we can be doing crunches while watching Oppenheimer. That's how Mark Wahlberg would watch Oppenheimer. That's how Mark Wahlberg would watch Oppenheimer, isn't it? Wahlberg. He'd be crunching and playing golf. Couldn't he? He'd be trying to land that ball right in Oppenheimer's gob.
Are you seeing if you do see Oppenheimer, are you seeing it in IMAX quality?
Not IMAX, but my dad has insisted he wants to see it in 70 millimeter.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
But he wants to see it in the big ones. That's why there aren't that many showings of it.
See, he quite the cineast, is he, your dad?
To be honest, he's just a massive fan of nuclear war. It's one of his greatest regrets that hasn't lived to see a really, really bad one. Also, though, the other thing he was suggesting was that I should... Because I'm seeing Oppenheimer as a bit of a slog. I mean, I know which side of the Barbenheimer toast my butter's going on, because I've seen Barbie. Have you seen either of Barbenheimer?
No, I've not. Have you?
I get to the cinema about once every 8 months.
But also, it doesn't hit you. Exeter, it's still Kramer versus Kramer, isn't it, in Exeter? That's you're still quite behind.
People are very excited about. I'm more excited about seeing Ghostbusters 2, really. But
you know. Don't get your hopes up, Mike. Oh, but, I mean, is it going to be a slog, isn't it? 3 hours.
Yeah, I'm not rushing to see Oppenheimer. I'd like to see Barbie. I've not got around to it.
Barbie's excellent. Also, my dad has let me know through my mum that he's also quite hoping that before we see it, I should watch a documentary about Oppenheimer that's on TV at the moment so that I understand Oppenheimer better when I see it.
Oh, no.
I mean, I'm not boning up on Oppenheimer to watch Oppenheimer. Oppenheimer is the boning.
So basically, both of these potential dates have got admin for you, haven't they?
Yeah.
One's a health questionnaire, the other one's a
Oppenheimer doc. It's both the two sides of a whole human being, neither of which I'm currently doing. Just being mentally and physically fit. Yeah.
I don't think your father really expects you to have seen that documentary. I think he knows that your brothers will have seen it, of course.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't think he expects that you'd have got around to it. And he can talk. He can have a proper conversation with about Oppenheimer with one of his brothers.
Well, as he calls them, one of my true sons. Yeah,
exactly. Because evidently they're not available during the day to go to the cinema with him because of their actual jobs. But there's...
I'm the one in The Godfather, aren't I? The one who goes to Vegas. What's he called? Fredo.
Do you get shot in a boat?
Get shot in a boat by my own fashion plan. Yeah,
yeah. It does sound like you're going to be shot in a pond on Hampstead Heath by the close of Friday.
It could be that I turn up to Oppenheim and it's just
a pond.
It's just a boat in the middle of the auditorium. You're like, hang on.
Well, I'm saying Oppenheimer, Mike. What's your vote?
Oh, Oppenheimer all the way. That's easy peasy.
I am going to do Oppenheimer then. Thanks, guys.
Good. For the Padres.
For the Padres.
Big shout out to the Padres.
And if you are a Padre, get in touch. Quickly, last thing on Beefcake Journey. I was thinking, this would be a radio first.
Oh, yeah?
Shall I? I'm just thinking, I'm going to cancel my session with the Beefmaster live on radio. Is this radio?
No. On a pre-recorded podcast.
Live on Pre-Rec. Okay. Hi. I should probably call him the Beefmaster in the email, shouldn't I, just for consistency? Hello. Shall I start calling him the Beefmaster and see if he responds in any, see if he notices it? I'm really sorry, but damn it. Hate having to write that all the time and say it to people all the time. I'm really sorry, but I can't make our... Can you hear that? Listen to that. The keyboards. That's the real sound of someone cancelling a personal training session.
Yeah, Ben's not added that in afterwards. So.
I'm really sorry, but...
I'm sorry, but Christopher Nolan's singular vision for this movie...
is too compelling. Are you trying to say that you're more important than the prospect of nuclear Armageddon?
And my father's schedule.
I'm really sorry, but I can't make our session. I'm going to say because of work. Is that bad? That means I'm lying. This could be a first. This is a live lie.
This is how he'll trap you.
This is real.
This is how, just admit that your father is taking you to the cinema, after which your mother is going to take you and a friend swimming.
And it's my birthday tomorrow, but I am allowed cake today. Presents on Sunday.
But not a drink from the vending machine.
Well, she said I can only have a drink from the vending machine once I can lift the vending machine. And that's over to you. That's going to be over to you, the Beefmaster, and I'll work together. I'm really sorry, but I can't make our session because I am busy tomorrow.
Fine. Yeah.
Oh, God almighty. And now I've got to tell him I'm away next week. So it's going to have to be a full... I'll get in touch again in 2 weeks. I mean, this is not the Rocky montage we thought it was going to be, is it? It really isn't. I'm not even close to the bit where he goes into a barn and starts lifting up cows.
He sort of punches cows, isn't he?
It's using hanging cows as punch bags. I'm really sorry about my comic session because I am busy tomorrow.
Why don't you recommend that you and he get together maybe one evening to watch Tenet together?
Well, I tell you what, I feel like my Beefcake Journey is going backwards in time in terms of my body.
Have either of you seen Tenet? I've not seen Tenet.
No, but it sounded fearsomely hard work. It did. I think that what my feeling about Oppenheimer is finally Christopher Nolan has found a subject matter which will be as boring as his treatment of it, if you know what I mean. Like, finally the two have matched up. His sort of heavy-handed, really slow, talky, slightly mansplainy sort of filmmaking will be matched up with a fairly dry topic.
All brilliantly lit.
All superbly lit.
But quite hard to hear what anyone's saying.
By a man called Herbert Nancaster, who is like a 95-year-old British, slightly cockney guy, isn't it? It's always that, oh, yeah, I worked on E.T., I worked on...
And he only uses naked flames. He refuses the bulb.
Yeah. You've got to keep it real, do you know what I mean? That's what I've always said.
Mike, that genuinely sounds like the kind of film that would sort of get a bit of traction. If it was entirely lit by open flame.
Lit by hill beacons.
Yeah.
It's the kind of, what's the kind of thing that Nolan would get into, wouldn't he? He says, I'm going to make a film for the first time. He'd be really good at mansplaining it in interviews. I mean, it's not his fault, he's a man. But, and he has to explain things sometimes when people ask him. But people are quite interested because he's a very successful filmmaker. But anyway, I'm going to make a first film about the pre-cinema age using only pre-cinema technology. That's right. No cameras.
It won't be filmed.
Everything will be pony, to do with ponies. Be ponies
and oils.
Ponies and oils.
The only way to experience it is for a pony to remember it and tell you about it.
A pony to remember a series of brass rubbings that I've shown him weeks before.
The thing is, I'm using Stephen Rankandle, who's an 117-year-old Cockney man who worked on all the Ealing comedies.
The inventor of the steam-powered microphone. It didn't work.
It was him. But it was a bloody beautiful thing. But he's going to get a pony to walk through paint and then walk on the viewer, clippity-clopping the story onto the viewer's body. Yeah. And obviously the story will be about... Well, the first pony. Peter the pony. That's the kind of thing that will happen next, probably. What was Tenet about?
I don't think anyone knows, even people in it.
Is that why it's called Tenet? Because the one thing they kept on writing on one of the notice boards was, we've got to come up with a basic Tenet for this film. It doesn't currently have a Tenet. And they just went with Tenet. It wasn't Tenet that sometimes time goes forwards and sometimes it goes backwards.
But I think that's what Interstellar was about, right, as well, wasn't it? I did not understand a single second of Interstellar.
But he regretted that Interstellar wasn't a palindrome, so he had to try again, basically. I think that was his only regret.
Oh, it's because it's a palindrome. Very clever.
Yeah, that's why it's called Tenet. I imagine there's just lots of shots of, like, a pocket watch going backwards. Yeah. That's what
Michael Caine
going backwards.
Just shots of Michael Caine going backwards. Also, I started watching Interstellar, but I didn't get beyond the bit where there's a guy like in the fields in America, and then suddenly he's in a basement with Michael
Sheen.
What's he called? Michael Douglas. No, what's he called?
Michael Johnson, the 400-meter runner.
Well, it was all the Michaels, wasn't it?
They're all trapped in a bookcase, I think.
Yeah.
Michael Parkinson.
What's he called? The guy we were just talking about now, who played Arthur in the Batman.
Caine,
sorry. So it's the bit where he went into a sort of sub-basement and there was Michael Caine in there.
Were you watching Batman?
Yeah, I think that was Batman again. I think the DVD was just in the wrong case.
I know.
You just watched Batman backwards. Maybe that's what Tenet was.
Yeah, it was about a young boy who decided to hire a hoodlum to kill his parents in front of him to get over the trauma
of being a vigilante in adult life.
Of having been dressed up as a bat. having been a bat-themed vigilante throughout his teenage years, where he was also unusually larger than he had been in his childhood years. It's another thing he had to deal with. Benjamin Bat. Batten. Benjamin Batmon. Amazing tale of Benjamin Batmon. Yeah. That's the kind of thing an AI would do, wouldn't it? It would fuse two films together and make the amazing story of Benjamin Batmon. Okay. Hi, Beefmaster. I'm really sorry, but I can't make our session tomorrow. Because I'm busy tomorrow. Or am I busy yesterday? Good question if you've seen the film Tenet. Do you enjoy that? And I'm away next week. Shall I say that I'm visiting an international Crunches convention?
No. He'll be at that convention. He'll suggest you meet.
But, oh, yeah, cool. I'm there. We'll do a breakout session.
Yeah, exactly. You want to meet at the powder stool section.
You know what? I'm just going to say I'm really sorry about coming to our session because I'm busy tomorrow. I'm just going to say I'll be in touch again soon.
For the love of God, don't simply book it for when you're back, just to get back in touch.
I can't think that far ahead, Mike. I'm really sorry, but I can't make a session because I'm busy tomorrow. I'll be in touch again soon, Henry. All right, it's gone. It's sent. Sorry. That was real.
Well done, Henry.
A world first.
Yeah. Massive.
Right, should we turn on the beam machine? Beam machine. Turn on the beam machine. This week's topic, as sent in by Catherine from Bremen, is fashion.
Good grief.
Shake it, move it, groove it. Move it tight. Ooh, smooth.
That feels quite daunting. That's a real actual sort of topic.
It's a big one.
People make supplements about and everything.
Well, let's go for today's fashion. We can start with.
Okay. What we're wearing. So I'm wearing my pyjamas.
Are you? No, you're not. That's a t-shirt.
Well, it's a t-shirt that I only wear in bed. It's kind of.
Is it really?
I assume you have the system where t-shirts graduate to becoming bed t-shirts.
Let's have a look.
Yeah. So I can stand up. Right.
Oh, it's okay. So a Lisbon tram.
It's a tram. It's one of Lisbon's famous trams.
Oh, that's not a bad t-shirt.
It's a t-shirt that my sister bought me when she went on holiday to Lisbon, and she brought it back for me.
Very nice. And then what are we dealing beyond that? Naked from the waist down, or what are we talking? How do you sleep?
Oh, below that, some shorts.
Okay, just conceding. Oh, just some,
are those underpants or shorts?
They're sort of sleeping shorts.
Sleeping shorts, just covering the very top of the bean machine. Yeah, very nice, very tasteful.
And they've got bees on them.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
I think this is a good topic. Bed fashion. It's not something you hear about that often.
I've got some great bed fashion. My girlfriend bought me some pajamas last week. Mm. They're sort of silky. They've got tigers on. Mm. It's kind of like what Tony Montana might wear to bed. You know, it's quite.
Do you mean Tony Soprano?
No.
Okay.
Who's Tony Montana though? That's a good question.
Who the hell's Tony Montana?
Hannah Montana's dad.
No, Tony Montana is who I'm thinking of. It's the lead character in Scarface.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, good chat.
Yeah. Very nice.
Have you been tempted to wear them out and about?
I've worn them around my local area a bit.
Yeah.
I guess if you're in a drop-top Saab, it's the sort of PJs you can get away with.
Oh, God. Those would go lovely with the Saab.
Wowie.
I've worn them. I had to go out and move my car, and I just couldn't be asked to change, so I was...
So that was the shirt you were in the Saab?
I was, yeah.
Yeah. You had time to take the hood down there, didn't you? Hmm?
Of course.
How's it going with the Saab?
It went in for its MOT.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And a mere multiples of hundreds of pounds later, it's back on the road.
Ouchie, ouchie.
Oof. How much of that was on the pyjamas? Because you have to be wearing some sort of silk pyjama, don't you?
And you get most of your silk pyjamas from Quick Fit these days, don't you?
That's right.
In their impulse purchase section.
It needed a new timing belt. A job that needs doing every 75,000 miles.
Is it? Can tell you what that is.
And we've all got a timing belt that we all wear around our midriffs, don't we, in a way? Which changes as time passes.
I've got quite an array of pyjamas. I've sort of got into it recently. Last couple of years.
Even in the recent heat.
Well, yeah, because I've got my silky tiger pyjamas for the heat.
Wow.
Yeah.
They're perfect. But then also in recent years, I bought some real, like, old man reading the paper sort of pyjamas.
Tweed pyjamas?
A bit tweedy, yeah. Sort of like very M&S kind of.
Do they have a pocket? I always find it weird when pyjamas have a pocket. What are you supposed to be... When you're in bed thinking, oh, have I got my... Well, what was it you need? Wallet, keys, phone?
Keys to the safe.
Keys to the safe, of course.
You never know. You never know who in the household might try and get those off you see.
Okay, yeah.
I can't get on board with pyjamas much these days, unless it's freezing.
Oh, really? A nude sleeper?
Yeah, it's just spooning a Vizsla, really. That's me. As nature intended.
Oh, God.
Pam. 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 Pam.
Good girl, Pam. Good girl, Pam. Oh, Pam.
Pam, Pam. Pam, Pam. Pam, Pam. No, no, Pam, Pam, Pam. I wear what, in bed, I wear what Marilyn Monroe famously wore.
JFK. Go to bed with the corpse of JFK.
Whoever is the oldest living relative or descendant, yeah, in the Kennedy family.
You wear them like a unitard. Send them packing in the morning.
Yeah, no, I can't be wearing pyjamas and clothes in bed. I mean, I'll wear my pants du jour.
Yeah. I wear the pants of tomorrow.
Do you?
Oh, this is weird. This is like your whole thing of having a bath in the evening.
Yeah.
To ensure that you're never fully clean when really dealing with any member of the public. Ever. Ever. And that's guaranteed. And you will never leave the house wearing unsoiled pants. Ever. That's the Benjamin guarantee. So you have a bath in the evening.
Well, 1 a.m. bath with the World Service.
You have a 1 a.m. bath listening to financial news from the Asian markets.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't you?
Yeah. Then fresh pants.
Fresh pants, immediately soiled.
So clean. Yeah. So you're clean, completely clean. And then do you put pajamas over your pants?
Yeah.
So you're dressed.
You put your clothes for the next working day on top of your pajamas, so you're ready to go. Yeah. So they're pre-soiled.
And you've got tomorrow's pants, which you're breaking in advance. They're on as well.
And then you get in the Saab, turn on the engine so it rolls over for a bit. 5 hours later, you're good to go.
So you wear pants and pyjamas. You're dressed up. You're wearing layers in bed.
Yeah. I could receive a dignitary at a moment's notice.
Yeah.
Fend off an ambush.
You'd be in all sorts of trouble.
So if a SWAT team was to bust through into your bedroom in the middle of the night like they do in films, you wouldn't have that, because normally the person panics. You'd be like, come in, I'm sure we can work this out. over a cup of tea from my tea's maid, which is right here, and there's always got a cup of tea on the go in the event that this would happen. And what's that smell? That's right, it's the smell of lasagna. I've got a lasagna constantly cooking. I didn't know that people wore pants to underneath pyjamas. That to me,
really?
I didn't know that was a thing. Mike, does that surprise you?
It does surprise me. I always assumed a pyjama was a pantless item. Unless there'd been a mistake, or unless there was something that the pants need to sort of, some sort of medical appliance that needs to be held in.
Yeah.
By a tight Y-front or something like that. Some sort of pad. In that case, I can understand.
Well, look, Ben Seat. Look, we know Ben Seat. we don't have to...
I seek kindness.
That's what you call it. Kindness, goodwill. So Ben, for swimming trunks, you wouldn't wear pants under swimming trunks, would you?
You mean pants at all times.
He's having to think about it though.
No, of course I wouldn't. The only reason I was the pause was because I read a thing in The Guardian this week about how it's now trendy for young people to wear pants under swimming shorts to show off the brand of their pants.
No, but they get booted out. If there's a decent lifeguard, they get booted out. I was in the swimming pool just the other day and three young men came in. Well, actually, to be honest, they weren't wearing swimming trunks at all. They were just wearing pants and trying to get away with it.
Yeah.
And they were sent away with a flea in their ear. I was thrilled.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, they got thrown out for wearing pants instead of swimming trunks. Yeah. Because those are revealing, depending on what kind of pants.
Pants. They're just their...
Thin line, isn't it? But I suppose trunks have a structured internal lining, don't they?
I think it's them all thinking about what might be in those pants and how well are those young men looking after themselves.
You know, when did those pants first get put on?
Exactly. Exactly.
At Christmas once, when I was like 8 or 9 years old, my mum accidentally gave me some bawdy, ribald boxer shorts for Christmas.
Really?
Not knowing what they were, because she just bought them from... she bought them from a sort of market stall. She'd bought
from an Ann Summers knockoff market stall.
And she had no idea it was on them. I opened these pants, boxer shorts,
crotchless,
and well, I didn't open them as much as unfurl them. I thought, these are leathery. No, they were boxer shorts with lots of pictures, lots of cartoons of bulls having sex with cows. No, sorry, that's wrong. It was rhinoceroses having sex.
With cows.
With cows. It was rhinoceroses having sex and with the words...
You're specifically saying having sex, not mating, but having... I mean, were there sort of different positions and...
Well, I don't know if it was leisure, sort of love leisure play. Sex. Well, no, it was your Attenborough documentary, right. You know, one on top of the other.
Okay.
Mating season. And written feeling horny.
I see.
So all over it was rhinos having sex and feeling horny over and over again. Yeah. And I looked at it and I was like, I was just looking at it and I was sort of mesmerised.
Yeah.
And then quickly it was snatched out of my hand.
No present for you this year, Henry.
You will see these pants again on your 18th birthday. But like, it was sort of created panic in the Christmas. It was sort of panic in the household as the pants were whisked away. My brothers were losing it, laughing. My dad was panicking. And what do we do with the pants? What do we do with the pants? We're going to hide them, put them somewhere else. And suddenly I had the pants again. They're on my head. Like, how's he got them again? Oh, God. But said Ben, you do wear a lot of underpants, and you like your layers.
But I don't wear a lot of underpants. I wear a pair of underpants, no. which I'd be interested. Certainly, people emailing in to let me know that I'm not a complete free for wearing underpants in bed.
Yeah, No, I didn't think you were a complete free, but I just find it interesting. Mm. I mean, it takes all sorts, doesn't it? Your normals and your freaks.
I've got Christmas pajamas that I was bought.
Yeah,
which is a little an otter with a Christmas hat on, I think.
Fashion, New York, London, Milan. Move it, groove it. Yeah, baby.
Otter with a Christmas hat.
Yeah, I'm just pants for my bed fashion, just pants. And Mike, you're just pants, are you?
Well, you surely. I'm sort of zero these days.
Come on, mate, that is wrong.
What do you mean? Naked in bed?
You're not totally nude. You're basically rolling around in a huge bit of toilet paper, that means. That's what your duvet is.
That's why we have disposable bed sheets.
Why is it, darling, that our normal bed sheets always end up with a leopard print design? Why is that?
Yeah, unless it's freezing cold these days. I've been through different phases, certainly, but at the moment, I'm very much...
I can't.
The old birthday suit.
Blimey.
I would, so this might be a bit indelicate for the listener. Mm. I would feel in that situation that my...
Do your dog's going to bite your dick off in the dead of night? Yeah, I'll worry about it. Sure. Could happen.
It's the cartoon snack of any dog, isn't it?
Occasionally jiggling about. Yeah. I'm asking for trouble.
Would you still love Pam if that happened?
Of course. Yeah. And I have more need for Pam in my life than I have for that.
Yeah.
I like to feel that the chaps are sort of slightly safely tied down, slightly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I think let loose, I feel like I'd roll onto one of them somehow in such a way that I'd wake up in a huge amount of pain. Or, do you know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah.
I'd have to sort of sellotape them to my lower thorax somehow.
Essentially, if you're storing a motorbike, you put a tarpaulin over it.
That's exactly right, Henry.
You know what I mean? You don't leave that motorbike open to the elements.
Okay. But I mean, I've put a lot of hours into this. Nothing's happened. You know, there haven't been any disasters so far. No one's ever stolen the Harley, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's slowly rusting, Mike.
Yeah. Oh, it's rusting, that's true. And the hubcaps have gone.
So in terms of fashion, I think, out of the three of us, quite obviously Henry's got the best sense of dress, I would say.
Oh, he's going for that.
I mean, not today. He's wearing an absolutely lurid green shirt.
Mm. It's a real Boris Johnson on holiday shirt, isn't it? Johnson snapped by the Daily Mail on holiday. Real sort of toff knob shirt. It's just very bright green.
I would say that Mike always looks good, I would say.
Yeah.
Sure.
But it's almost despite what he's wearing.
Well, he almost... Yeah, exactly. It's almost arrogant the way he knows that he'll look good irrespective of his footwear or whatever.
I wear quite basic clothes. I mean, right now I'm in just a T-shirt. And I've got quite muddy cargo shorts on, but that's just because I was walking Pam before the thingy. And these are very useful for... poo bags and dog treats. The pockets. It's utility.
Well, it's pure. It's utility, and it's pure function, isn't it? With Mike, yeah. It's pure practicality. There isn't really an aesthetic component in the choice.
No,
is there? For example, Mike, about 10 years ago, I think Mike discovered a type of shoe.
Yeah.
Which doesn't give him blisters.
Yeah.
Doesn't cause him any pain.
Fits my sort of flipper-like feet perfectly.
Fits his flipper-like feet perfectly. And as far as I know, you bought enough pairs to last you for life because Mike's always wearing the same shoes.
Yeah, yeah. So when they die, when they're worn through, I just get the same type. Yeah.
Have you stockpiled? Because they could change.
I haven't stockpiled. There's certainly more than one usable pair, I would say. There's basically a dress pair and a day-to-day pair.
Okay.
So the fact that they basically look a bit like a Cornish pasty made of leather.
Yeah.
Don't they? They look like a leather pasty.
Yeah.
But that That's not, you're not going for a leather pasty look. That's irrelevant to you. You don't even see the leather pasty, do you?
No, I'm not. They just feel comfortable.
But people looking at you go, why is he wearing leather pasties on his feet? What's that about?
And they're welcome to.
And also the same goes for your lurid flip-flops that you wore at the live show a few years ago, which look like mini...
Which I still have and I still use, but they got quite a backlash, so I've not worn them at the live show since.
Well, again, because they look like mini 1980s jet skis.
Mm. Which are cool, right?
they've got bright lurid 80s colours, and they're kind of, they're just weirdly big and chunky like a jet ski.
Yeah. Well, I'm quite clumsy, you see, so there's a good inch around the sort of toe area. They're quite, because they're sort of chunky, so I mean, they're very good sort of toaster prevention flip-flops.
But Mike, this is the thing, Mike, that you need to understand, or we don't need to understand, but I'm going to explain to you about fashion, okay. is that even if, so there are some people who, because I find it fascinating looking at people and what they're wearing and what it tells you about them, their choices and stuff. But there are some people who make no aesthetic choice. It's purely practical. And I think you're in that category, Mike. But what happens is you can't, your clothes still have meaning, even though you're not in control of it. All you're feeling is, does it cause canker sores?
Yes.
Is my breathing affected?
Yes.
Is blood flow constricted? As long as all those things... are a negative or whatever. As long as you, then you.
And that's why Mike's normally wearing a leather dress, with a big flowing sort of leather caftan.
It's bright white leather as well, so it shields me from the heat on a hot day.
But that's the thing, though, Mike, is that you end up making these choices, but they have a meaning to other people. So you were projecting stuff from your 1980s jet ski flip flops that you had no control of. You had no idea, and people are looking at you going, "Why is he wearing 1980s jet skis on his feet? What does that mean? What's he trying to say? Who is this guy?" Do you see what I mean?
That's interesting. Okay.
In a way, you can't dress in a way that doesn't reveal something about yourself, I think. Because even if you choose not to care about what you're choosing, you're actually revealing, well, to me, because I've studied Mike. I know that what he's revealing.
I think Mike probably cares about what he's wearing, doesn't he?
I don't know, but this reminds me of, I haven't really thought of that. It does remind me of an incident about, it's got to be at least 14 years ago. You came to see me in a play I was in, Henry. And afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
I came out.
Was it?
And you had admonished me.
Oh, God.
Because I was wearing, it was something like a Dallas Cowboys t-shirt that I was only wearing just because my... brother-in-law was getting rid of it and it fitted.
Exactly.
I mean, I didn't need to go to the shop.
Exactly.
It was a new t-shirt.
Exactly.
You bollocked me because it was meaningless. It did mean that, but I was clearly projecting something. And I remember you saying, this has got nothing to do with you. Maybe an eagle on it and possibly a motorbike. And
you're not in control of your signifiers, Mike. You're essentially just like, you're like spinning a roulette wheel and a painting is coming out and you're walking out with like a Piet Mondrian painting, sort of, carrying it around. And you don't realise that. You don't. It has meaning, but you're not in control of the meaning. So one option you could do, for example, Mike, is go. You could decide to tell people that you don't particularly care about clothes as a warning. Look. You could email them in advance, for example, before you meet up with them,
or on a sandwich board.
Mike, if it was a windy day, I could see circumstances where Mike, you would choose to wear a sandwich board if it was the most practical solution to the day's weather.
Oh, with the wind behind you, good grief, yeah.
But because one thing you could do, Mike, is choose a neutral wardrobe. But the thing is, then if you choose a neutral wardrobe, even that is making a decision about clothes. It's interesting.
When I was talking about what Mike tends to wear, that this is what I was thinking about, which is very, very often Mike will be wearing a t-shirt, which I will go, oh, what is that? And it'll be, oh, I was given it, or I found it. Or it's like an arbitrary thing.
Yeah.
Mm. Like you had a football one.
Yeah.
What was the football one?
That's deep arbitrary.
Wasn't it like for World Cup, like France 98 or something?
Yeah, it might be, yeah. That makes sense, yeah. I've got a NASA one as well.
In NASA?
I've got one from a place called Stony Creek in Connecticut.
But you've been there, that makes sense.
I do have a connection to that, vaguely.
Yeah. It was the football one that really spanned me out.
But it was given, again, that was given to me. I didn't buy it. I think that's why when I sort of gig and do, there's a suit I tend to wear these days.
Well, yes.
And that was an immense relief. I walked into Marks and I needed to dress up for a thing I was doing. I didn't have a suit, you know, apart from my wedding suit, which is sort of covered in moth holes. I've still got it just in case. And I walked into Marks and Sparks. It's basically the first suit I saw. I picked it up and thought, oh, that seems to fit. Done.
But you do look really good in that suit, I would say.
Well, thank you.
Mike, God forbid But if you were to ever die in a way that made you unrecognizable physically, so yeah. I'm also talking, we're going to have to talk, not even dental records, I'm afraid, for this, for this idea.
Okay, some sort of maceration. Not even any DNA left.
Even the
maceration followed by incineration.
Even the DNA spirals have been sort of tangled up.
But if you actually looked at the DNA, it would say that it was like a pig with a giraffe's head.
It would just be in the shape of a question mark.
I've been completely Nutella'd or something. I basically could go in a jar.
You've been on a tour of the Nutella factory, and we always knew this could happen. Fools, we were such fools. He's been Nutella'd. We've Nutella'd. But wait a minute. This Nutella-ing is so perfect that we could almost make this how we make Nutella. And that's how in 1985, Nutella Corporation changed their business practices. Visit the Nutella factory and become part of the experience. Yeah, Nutella'd. But could only be... So if we're in a situation where we could only... And a body has been found, we can only identify the remains through T-shirt records. Because the T-shirt's fine. Then they'd be like, all we know is he was high up in NASA.
And possibly the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, or exactly. Or I mean, all we know is he's from Stone Creek, Virginia. Or if it was your footwear, if it was, we've only been able to identify him from footwear records. If it's just footwear records, it'd be all we know about the victim was that they were definitely in Baywatch. Do you know what I mean? There's no information there about you.
My favourite Mike T-shirts, which I believe he actually bought, and I think it's a great T-shirt, is the Whitney Houston one.
Whitney.
Yeah.
Triple Whitney.
I've written that down in my little notepad here. Whitney Houston T-shirt.
Josh, I get it.
Yeah, get it.
Yeah. Hang on, Henry. You write stuff down during the podcast?
Yeah.
Are you cheating?
Yeah, I cheat, mate. I've written flute, footwear, 1150, socks.
Is that what you do when I'm speaking?
Yeah. That and Emma Tax Return.
This is the Whitney. Triple Whitney, as you can see, three Whitneys.
It's been washed a lot, hasn't it? She kind of looks like...
It's also near the end of its life. This is a phenomenon that started happening to me recently where I start getting very old T-shirts, starting getting a hole in the middle of the centre of the back for some reason.
What? Whoa.
Can't explain. It's happened to a few of them.
That's not a natural friction point.
No, so I don't understand that. It's been relegated to... That's now a sort of sports T-shirt, tragically, whereas it was back in the day, very much my number ones, my dress T-shirt.
And Mike, tell us the story of was this bought for you? Did you buy it yourself?
See, again, there's no link.
I think it was bought for me, you know. I think it was bought for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think a family member bought this for me because I thought I'd quite like it, even though I don't particularly listen to Whitney. And I did like it. They were right. And it got a lot of use.
The other thing happens, though, Mike, which can happen with someone who has completely random fashion, which is what I say you have. Totally, like properly random. So anything that's properly random is a little bit, it's sort of, it's almost a bit disturbing. It's a bit like the bean machine. You know, it's random. There's something a bit almost unholy about randomness because you've got this thing which is projecting meaning, but which doesn't mean anything. Weirdly then random things can happen. Like, for example, your Whitney Houston, I think there was a very brief period where your Whitney Houston T-shirt sort of felt like it was some sort of ironic, it kind of felt quite cool, weirdly, but it was just a stopped clock twice a day. There was no...
Right.
it wasn't cool, but it kind of looked like, oh, he's that guy with the Whitney Houston T-shirt. And, and actually, so sometimes you'll accidentally, sort of coincide with a fashion movement. Like, it just felt like it was a bit ironic or it was retro or something.
But if they saw me that, and then the next day they saw me walking around with just a blue T-shirt with California written on the middle, they'd understand that it was random.
But, or they'd have thought, hang on, he's being ironic about California. No, but can I say, I'm not slamming Mike here. Mike is such a tremendous-looking person that...
That's right.
If he were to adorn himself with clothes that were good as well, it would be a bit like...
Be too much. Gilding the lily.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, come on.
It would be...
His shoulder blades are so strong, they're coming out of the back of his T-shirts.
Coming out, making holes in his own T-shirts. Yeah.
Time to read your emails.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your horse.
My beautiful horse.
We've got an email from Dan.
Thank you, Dan.
And Dan is a serving Metropolitan Police officer.
Ooh.
And I'm afraid it's Listener Bollocking of the Week.
Oh, is it?
Accessing Listener Bollocking. Bollocking loading. Bollocking loaded.
This bollocking has the... Yeah, this is the port of the full UK legal system.
Is it an above boards bollocking, or is it a turn off the camera in interview room six for half an hour, mate?
It's the old he fell down the stairs bollocking. My lad. From a Metropolitan Police officer, I have to issue you with a bollocking of a police caution variety.
Okay.
So I think we're being formally cautioned here by the police.
I'm excited, but I'm also... there's a bit of me feeling a bit bulletproof because I think I'm outside of his jurisdiction.
Because, of course, you're only answerable to the local sheriff, aren't you?
That's right.
And Mike married his daughter, so he's off scot-free. That's how you do it.
He's busy chasing down a band of brigands in Dartmoor at the moment.
Also, it's onion justice, isn't it, in Exeter, where you weigh the person that brings their cause against you, so the complainant.
He's represented by an onion, yeah.
He's represented by an onion.
And then yeah, which is his legal right.
and then you, your own body weight in onions is then piled up.
That's right. And if it can stand up despite its own weight,
yeah,
then I'm innocent.
Yeah.
If the onions tumble...
You're a witch.
You're a witch.
I'm a witch and I'm onioned to death. I'm then julienned and sautéed. Yeah.
And then your family have to pay his family in onions for the next four generations.
That's right.
If you win, of course, you get to eat a fresh piping hot onion... out of his, out of the complainant's brain cavity. Don't you? Onion justice. Carry on.
I don't know whether Dan the policeman realised he was getting into this kind of system when he issued the bollocking, but, you know.
Yeah, it's very different in the metropolis.
Yeah.
Different customs.
What's Dan got to say?
It's in regards to your free and easy chat on the tall hat.
Oh, yeah. Yes, the bollard-shaped one.
Yeah, so you were talking about how you don't wear the hat anymore?
Yeah.
Officers do wear the tall hat.
But concealed under a more generic-looking hat, which is even taller, therefore.
He says, we wear it when on foot patrol, but not when in response car police mode.
Because I think it just looks too silly, doesn't it, to be running into a car and
poking out of a sunroof.
Doing a police chase with your hat's having to stick out the sunroof. Looks silly.
Also, when patrolling on specific operations when on foot,
King Charles is allowed to stop a Bobby on the beat and request to do a shit in his helmet. Is that true? Is that true? Just a question for... There's all kinds of lore, isn't there, around the helmets?
All stand for the king!
We're entering the regal zone. Regal zone. Regal zone.
Off with their heads!
On with the show!
Listen not to the whores and the shopkeepers.
Bring me more advisors.
The Regal Zone.
I think that's how they get their warrant. I think King Charles has to shit.
He has to, doesn't it? That's right.
In order for them to be a properly, fully warranted officer of the law. And not a probationer anymore.
Yeah.
Please accept your bollocking as kindly words of advice at this stage and be on your way. But next time it may be a very different conversation.
Well...
I'm going to risk the ire of the Met and I'm going to reflecto bollock that.
What?
What the hell are you talking about?
This won't be a first for Mike, I think.
Cocksure in here in the southwest with onion justice and the local sheriff. There's nothing Dan can do to touch me.
So what's your reflecto bollock? What's the nature of it?
I think I think it's a tissue of lies. I don't think they wear the hats.
Blimey.
Interesting.
What the hell's come over, Mike?
I clearly don't really think that.
You just want to send the bollock back.
Just poking the bear. I'm just poking the bear. I just don't know what my fellow local West Country residents would think if I was to accept a bollocking from a serving police officer in the capital. I don't think they'd like it.
No, good point.
I mean, if he gets in touch with the sheriff and the sheriff then comes to my door to bollock me, fair play. But sorry, Dan. I'm across state lines.
You have no jurisdiction here, sir.
Reflecto bollock.
Well, obviously, and you'll know the answer to that, Mike, won't you, tomorrow morning when you check how many beheaded crows there are on your doorstep.
If it's a prime number,
you're in trouble. If it's an even number, it means that you're okay.
Yeah. Obviously, I'm in a similar situation. I fall under the purview of South Wales Police, from whom I will accept a caution. I'll accept a caution also from Dyfed Powys Police.
Okay.
Gwent, I'll take.
Any of the Heatherleys.
So I will also, Mike, I'm going to take your lead and reflecto this one because I do not feel that he has the jurisdiction to do that.
Reflecto bollock.
Henry, do you accept or reflect?
I'm accepting that one.
Bollocking accepted.
Kowtowing.
I'm kowtowing.
Kowtowing to the man.
I'm kowtowing to the man, yeah. I don't have the guts.
It's a one in three.
I reckon it's probably true. I'm going to look out for it. Although, when do you actually see a Bobby on the beat these days? Not that often, is it?
Oh.
Yeah.
See, we do talk about the serious issues sometimes on this podcast.
Yep.
We've had an email from Rose.
Hello, Rose.
Hello, Beans. Was listening to your theological correction. So this is in relation to, we talked about, we had a bollocking essentially from a vicar who didn't want to call it a bollocking. He wanted to call it a theological correction because in his position in the community as a man of God, he didn't want to be seen to be using that kind of language, which I think is understandable. She says, the vicar's reluctance to use the term bollock resurfaced a fond childhood memory of mine when at a parish fair, my father, brackets the vicar, stubbed his toe and loudly exclaimed, bollocks! Much to the bewilderment of the parishioners and the amusement of 9-year-old me. Keep on beaning, Rose.
Thanks, Rose. Excellent.
That's very good. I imagine he went for the F word and thought, I just can't say the F word, but then...
got to reel it back, but I need something!
I need something! My central nervous system needs to say
sweet release.
Needs it.
If you are a vicar listening, and what you need to do in that situation is you need to train yourself to come out with a more theological phrase. So, for example, Lot's wife!
Ferryman. Patreon.com/3beansalad.
Thank you to those of you who signed up at the Patreon. Patreon.com/3beansalad. The main attraction there is our monthly bonus episode. Which is always very good. If you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout out from Mike in the Sean Bean Lounge. And that's where Mike spent last night, didn't you, Mike?
I certainly did. Yes, that's true.
What was the vibe down at the lounge?
It's quite a fresh vibe, actually, last night.
Yeah?
Fresh and breezy. But, you know, it's never without a tang of jeopardy. But we had a good time because, of course, it was the...
It was the annual visit from the charity dentist, wasn't it?
It certainly was. Thank you, Benjamin. And here's my report.
It was the annual visit from the charity dentist last night at the Sean Bean Lounge, and my oh my, was that charity dentist worked to the pulp. Mike H. Mind, Polly Callow and Armin Wilhelm all signed up for what they assumed would be a simple scale and polish, but at the end of the night left with balsa wood dentures. Chris Walter's teeth were discovered to have been stolen from the British Museum's Sumerian collection, and Lisa Tattershall's stolen from the Duchess of Kent. Verity Budd's dentine was overly sensitive to lukewarm, leading to an emergency admission. Mr. Matthew Reed's teeth were determined to be highly contagious and had to be sequestered and destroyed along with Paul Rowntree, who was mistaken for a deposition of plaque. Neil Smith had a cavity so large that Jem Fandango had already established a self-sufficient commune within it, including a paddy field irrigated by a hijacked salivary gland. A clerical error meant that at one stage of the evening, Sarah Lewis was mistaken for the charity dentist and, being too embarrassed to say anything, Sarah leant into it and went on to swap David Thorne's teeth for a set of talons, install braces to straighten Frederick Reinhardt's toes, whiten Vict 604's trousers, melt down Nicholas and fashion him into a gum shield for Carol Roberts, dry clean Catherine Greenall's tongue, and fully extract Laszlo Marx's mouth. Meanwhile, Nick Holon saw the actual charity dentist with concerns about his breath, which was deemed to be too good and is now being sold by Bianca Congela as a flavour of vape to the under-9s. Bex's teeth were independently sentient and spying on Lisa Garriock. Mel Style and Plus Greg's teeth were found to have outstanding Interpol warrants for extortion and wire fraud, respectively. Tom and Sophia Pleasant accidentally left their teeth in an Uber and had to make the best of their consultation with rapidly mocked-up papier-mâché replicas, which were in good health, albeit underflossed. Kai Pearson's teeth got 4 Bs, 2 Cs and an A star. Stuart Hammond's teeth won the mixed relay. Sally Hewson's left incisor was awarded its first black belt. And Ian Wilson, Ellie Rofe and SW's dental genealogy revealed that they were all descended from the same primordial gnasher. Sunbeam Loungers took advantage of the cut-price dental cosmetics on offer. Matt Reed got a granite work surface for his premolars. Catherine B. Harris pimped up her canines with subwoofers and a chrome wrap. Tom Castle had his jewellery upholstered. Aisling Barrett went for a disco ball uvula. And Liam really pushed the boat out with the dental equivalent of a Brazilian butt lift. Thanks all.
Okay, that's the podcast. We're going to play out with a version of our theme tune sent in by a listener. And this one's from James from Manchester. Please find attached a version of the Three Bean Salad jingle in the style of an 80s movie prom moment of triumph.
Oh, great.
Oh, wow, that sounds good.
To set the scene properly, I've included a small script.
That sounds really good.
Okay, here we go. The scene opens at the end of year prom at St. Farber Beans Academy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Henrietta Packer, captain of the cheer squad, and Benjamin, vice-captain of the football team, stand by the punch bowl. Benjamin still nursing the black eye he got from the captain for playing a prank on Plain Susan. The music cuts as Mike Wozniak, football team captain, walks in with a mysterious beauty that nobody recognises. Surely she must not go to our school. The evening moves along and it is now time to announce the prom king and queen. It is to be Mike Wozniak and Plain Susan.
What?
Wow.
As they take to the stage to receive their crowns, the following plays. I mean, it's a deep cut in terms of
very deep.
Calling back to an early episode. I mean, that's years ago.
Classic stuff, though.
So the completest. Yeah. Start from episode one if you want to track that down.
So if you, as you listen to this theme tune, imagine basically a sort of teenage Mike Wozniak romancing a secretary bird?
Yes, I think so. Yes, but with sort of, Brat Pack vibes. And Brat Pack sort of peripheral characters going on.
Probably got Emilio Estevez in it.
Oh, he's there for sure. Yeah. Probably doing some jokes. He's probably spiking the punch, I'll expect.
And this is a universe where just some people are birds, is it? Some people are birds.
Yeah. Probably the most sexually desirable people are birds, are flightless birds.
We live in a universe with birds, Henry. This is a universe where there's birds, is it? Yeah. Sounds a bit fanciful to me.
Yeah.
Good point, yeah. So it's the normal universe in relation to birds.
Yeah. Although, birds. Some of the birds are high school graduates.
And can drink punch. Okay, well, thank you for listening.
Thanks, James.
And thank you for that, James. And see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Bye. Bye-bye.